Hello, welcome back to Bloody Bizarre.
My name's Emma.
I'm Sarah.
We are sisters. If anyone's just tuning in, and they are like, they're really rude to each other.
Yeah, we are fairly rude to each other, but yeah. It's, you know.
And sometimes it's bloody warranted.
Yeah, agreed.
The idiotic stuff. So this is a podcast about bizarre stuff.
Weird stuff. Yeah, I was trying to explain it to someone and they were like, oh, it's like a true crime podcast. I was like,
Sometimes,
but yeah. Not always. It's no. Just things that are unusual or strange or, you know.
If you hear a baby, once again, that is Matilda, Sarah's child.
Yeah.
She is with us as the third co-host again. And this is the second time we've tried to make this podcast. We did try and make it the other day on a day when everything was going wrong.
Oh, gosh. We were in a car crash in the morning, both fine, but we were in a car crash in the morning, and then our appointment got cancelled, and then we started recording and the laptop died, and it was just like...
Yeah, a comedy of errors, a comedy of misfortune.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're back at it. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks in particular to those people that have been listening from the beginning. And if you haven't been listening since the beginning anyway, thanks to you too.
Yeah. I guess thanks for listening from the beginning and sticking with it through all of the audio issues and...
Every now and then we do have an audio issue, but we are better.
Yeah. Yeah, they still pop up.
Yeah. We're trying.
Did you have anything you want to talk about at the start? Any updates?
I do not think so.
The only thing I was going to say is there's a couple of updates I want to talk about. Particularly, I want to share some updates on the Ellie Warren case that you talked about a little while ago.
Yep.
But I'm going to do that in a separate, like its in own an upcoming, thing.
Yep.
Yeah, because Ellie's family are still trying to get justice and it sounds like it's really slow going. So I want to talk about that a little bit and what's been happening on that case,
yep.
Which will be a bit of a serious one.
And so if you're not familiar with that case, go back and listen to the Ellie Warren episode to get yourself free up on it. And then in the coming weeks, we'll do another update on what's been happening.
A really, really tragic one.
Yep.
And very annoying because nobody's been held accountable for it yet. So
it's the father is just relentless in his pursuit for justice, obviously, yep. For his daughter. And in my opinion, I think I know who did it.
Yeah, and it should be being talked about more, particularly in Australia. Yep. So,
and I will have an update shortly on the Delphi murder case with Richard Allen, because that's going through the courts at the moment and there's been some stuff revealed, which is interesting.
Yes, and like I said to you last week, I think the case that I was researching for this episode that I've decided not to do yet, that is currently going through court as well. So that's another reason that I wanted to wait to do it, because there's some stuff happening on it. She's giggling down there.
She's just laughing at nothing.
No, she's laughing at your toes because you're moving your toes around.
Okay. She was touching them before.
Yeah. Everything's funny to a baby.
I'm kicking her.
Yeah, sometimes Abby, like, smacks her and it makes her laugh. And so then I'm kind of like, they're like, oh, gentle, gentle. But they're both laughing. So I'm like, I don't want to step in and be like, no, no, no hitting.
It's like when you smack a cat on the butt.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like playful hitting. Yeah, so then I'm just sort of there like, okay, just gentle hitting. Like... I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, no. All right, well then, if that's the end of the announcements, jump into your story.
And I forgot the true crime cards again.
Well, look, we forgot it last week, so we'll take a break from the true crime cards.
We'll just do it when we remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun, though.
It's a fun thing, yeah.
But, yeah, we're both so shit at remembering things.
Yeah.
And we have to cram these recordings in like,
the
little...
pockets of time that we can find.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, so I'll just jump straight in. Do your own little true crime game, I guess.
Yeah. Send us some trivia.
Yeah, I would love that. Okay, so today I'm going to tell you about Juliana Kopka. Now, I believe you know about this one because when we started recording the other week and I mentioned the name, you said, yes, I've heard this story.
I do know this story quite well. I've listened to a couple of podcasts. Ooh. I did just kick her in the face.
She seems unbothered.
Yeah.
Unbothered queen.
Yeah. It was a very soft kick.
Oh, yeah, she's fine.
Yeah, I've listened to two podcasts on this story in particular, so I will be correcting you as you go through. Okay.
Love that. Yeah, yeah, I'm always happy to learn.
Yeah. And is it not, it's definitely Juliana, it's not Juliana? No, she's German.
No, she's German. Yeah. Was that a test? Are you testing me?
Oh, well. There'll be a few of those.
Okay, so some sources. There's only a couple. Wings of Hope documentary. Wikipedia. And the Washington Post article by Brittany Shamas. Okay. So Juliana was born in Lima, Peru in 1954. She was the only child of two very smart parents from Germany, a zoologist and an ornithologist. When Juliana was 14...
What is ornithology?
Birds.
Birds.
Yes. And you can't get me on those ones because I listen to my ologies podcast religiously.
Yeah. You don't have to listen to ologies to know what an ornithologist is.
When Juliana was 14, the family moved to literally live in the rainforest while her parents helped to establish the Panguana Research Station.
Beautiful.
Side note, this research station still exists, and since 2011, it's also become a conservation area.
Should we go there?
If we're allowed to.
Yeah, aren't you? You're allowed to go to conservation areas, aren't you?
I don't know. I don't know the rules.
I'll find out.
Okay. Juliana was eventually required to return to mainstream schooling because she was being homeschooled at this station and the powers that be, the man, didn't like that.
Fuck the government. Oh, this is going to drop. Sorry, we're recording this on the day of the US election. So we're not...
Tilly is not a fan of that.
And we're not just not mentioning it because it's like not, you know... a big deal. It's just that the results haven't come out yet. I love the idea that because she was being homeschooled by those two parents, one's what, biologist?
They were both like zoologists, yeah. But one of them was an ornithologist.
Like specialised, yeah.
In birds, yeah.
And so I love the idea that she wouldn't be able to like tell you anything about history or anything like that, but then you'd ask her about birds and she'd like, I love that. Obviously they would teach her a full curriculum, yeah. But I love the idea that she wouldn't.
Yeah. And she like couldn't write her name, but she, yeah.
Yeah, she can't count to 10, but she can tell you the like genus of like the pelican or whatever.
The full life cycle of, yeah. But anyway, when she went to mainstream school, she did really well and she graduated in 1971.
Okay.
So she was 17.
Yeah.
Juliana and her mother were going to fly back to the research station on the 19th or 20th of December, but Juliana wanted to stay for her graduation ceremony, like her prom or, you know, whatever.
Right.
Which was on the 23rd of December. As such, Juliana and her mum booked a flight for the following day, being Christmas Eve, so that they could make it back to spend Christmas and celebrate with their dad. So on the 24th of December 1971, Juliana and her mother, along with 84 other passengers and 6 crew, boarded Lanza Flight 508.
Now, I've heard of Lanza before.
Yeah, that's not surprising. They did not have a great safety reputation.
Okay.
And her dad was quite nervous about them. He didn't want them to fly with Lanza, but there were no other flights available because it was Christmas Eve. So
yeah,
it was.
That makes sense. Yeah. So, are Lanza still operating?
I don't know.
Okay. Do you want me to look?
You can do.
Lanza Airlines.
This is the early 70s, so I doubt they're still around.
I think so.
Okay. Well, I'm not saying that they're bad. listen to this story and then make your own mind up.
Yeah, you can make your own mind. I don't think they're going to sponsor us, though, so I think we can say what we want.
No, I just don't want to get sued.
Oh, well, this is just...
it's just honest opinion.
I can't wait for the day that a lawyer writes in and is like, you know that means...
That means nothing.
That means dick.
It's my honest opinion that it will save us from being sued. So, anyway, they're on this flight. They fly into a storm.
Okay.
The theory is that they probably knew that this wasn't the safe, that they probably shouldn't have been flying into this storm, but they were on a really tight schedule. Plane was packed. It was Christmas Eve. They were trying to get people back to their families.
Yeah.
A lot of pressure on them. So they were just kind of like, we'll be fine. So they're flying through this storm. People are getting scared.
Yep.
And then the plane gets struck by lightning. The right wing gets struck by lightning. And obviously, like, other passengers are screaming, crying. Mm. Juliana heard her mother say, now it's all over.
That's That's awful.
It's grim.
Yeah.
That's the last thing she heard her mum say. The plane pointed sharply downwards, starting to nosedive before it started literally like falling apart in the sky, disintegrating. Right. Juliana had her seatbelt on and her whole row of seats was sucked from the fuselage.
Wow.
In her book, she writes of this moment, quote, "My mother is no longer at my side and I'm no longer in the airplane." She told the New York Times in an interview, "I hadn't left the plane, but the plane had left me." Juliana said as she fell, the seat swung round and round like a helicopter blade, but she blacked out before she actually hit the ground in the middle of the Peruvian jungle. Juliana had fallen roughly 3,000 meters or 10,000 feet, which is an insane, like, it is insane to think of that kind of height to fall from.
Yeah.
Due to a concussion, she doesn't remember the next 20-ish hours, but she woke up at 9 a.m. the next day. A fact that she knew because her watch was still working.
Yeah, okay.
She had unbuckled her seatbelt at some point, but she was still in her seat.
Yeah, so probably, like, as she was passed out, like, as she was sleeping, she just, like, inadvertently did it,
It was pouring rain and she was soaking wet.
Yeah.
She was pretty knocked about from the crash. She wasn't in pain. She's quoted as saying she felt like she had cotton balls around her. Probably like a bit of shock, I'd say.
Yeah.
But she couldn't get up without passing out.
Right.
So she said the best she could do was get up on her knees before everything would go black again.
Mm.
So she managed to crawl underneath the seat and lay there. And she reckons it was about a day that she lay there just kind of regaining her strength, recovering a little bit because she was probably super concussed.
Yeah. I can almost imagine it. Like,
yeah,
you're so injured and out of it, and then but it's pouring rain, so you want to get out of the rain. So you pull yourself under the chairs for some coverage, but then, like, in the meantime, you're gradually, like, becoming more and more aware of what's happened and the situation, and
that's exactly it. Her injuries included a concussion, obviously, an injured eye, a broken collarbone, a laceration to her leg, a laceration to her arm that had become infected with maggots, a broken shin, and a torn ACL. After gaining a little bit of her strength back, Juliana scouted the area around her for other survivors and supplies.
Did you say torn ACL?
Yeah.
And she's still able to walk?
I think, like, hobble. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
This is an incredible story.
It is, yep.
She scattered the area around her. In a stroke of good luck, she found a packet of lollies that must have, like, been, you know, in the crash.
Yep.
Spoiler here, but this was the only food she found. And by rationing it, this kept her alive throughout her whole ordeal.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if any of our listeners have played the game The Forest, but in The Forest and in Sons of the Forest, you are in a plane crash and you have to gather goods and... You know, the food that comes from the plane is your saving grace. But obviously, if you've been sucked out and it's just your row of seats.
Yeah. That game looked fun when I was watching you play it. It looked really fun.
Most fun game in the world.
At one point, she followed the sound of a vulture. She heard a vulture. She followed it, followed the sound, and found three other passengers dead and still in their seats.
Yep.
One of them was a woman and she was scared it might be her mum. So she kind of poked the shoe off so that she could see the feet, and this woman had painted toenails. She was like, okay, it's not my mum.
Yeah.
Because obviously at this point she thinks there's a chance that, you know, other people have survived
as
well.
If she has,
also a spoiler, Juliana ends up being the only survivor of this crash. During the first few days, she did hear rescue planes flying overhead, but the tree canopy was far too thick for anyone to see her from the air. She soon realized nobody would be coming to save her, and if she was going to survive, she'd have to save herself. She said that was her lowest moment, was when the plane stopped going over, because she's like, they've stopped looking for me.
Yeah.
Water was abundant in the rainforest, obviously. She would mainly collect rainwater from leaves, so thirst wasn't a problem, but food was more problematic. She knew that a lot of plants in the area were poisonous, and so she didn't want to risk eating them, because obviously she's got this background knowing, you know, she went to the school of the rainforest, and she didn't have adequate tools to hunt or fish. So she just had those lollies and she rationed them the whole time that she went through this ordeal. Also, just to jump ahead and let you know, she spent 10 days in the rainforest, so those lollies lasted her 10 days.
Yeah.
She was obviously starving, but...
I think what is more...
amazing,
I guess, for lack of a better word, is that she is, first of all, survives the plane crash,
mm-hmm.
and then is able to get herself around with her injuries.
Yeah, yeah. I think about the amount of pain she would be in.
Yeah, well, even not just pain, but like that the body, that her body didn't just shut down.
Yeah, yeah. Juliana made her way through dense forest every day. She went slowly and carefully, throwing her shoe out in front of her to scare away snakes, because she knew that there were a lot of snakes in the area. Because yeah. think about, like, you know, you think about walking through the forest or the bush or whatever. Mm. We walk on, like, the paths. But yeah. think about being dropped into dense jungle where yeah. there's no paths. Yeah. It's like...
There was once...
The leaf litter alone. There'd yeah. be so much. And she said there was, like, logs and stuff, like, yeah. blocking her way. She was trying to climb over stuff, clamber under stuff.
There was once where I was in the bush. We were driving in the bush and I needed to do a wee-wee. And so I went off the beaten path to, mm-hmm. To do it in the bush.
Mm.
But I like to go quite far in so that people don't see me.
Yeah.
Don't see my bare butt. Boy, the number of times I fell over.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was not injured at all.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure, I was a little bit inebriated. But don't think that's neither here nor there.
Juliana eventually found a small stream and remembered some advice that her father had given her. So he told her that if she was ever lost, to follow water, as it would generally lead to a bigger amount of water and then it might lead to people.
Do you know who else says that?
Bear Grylls.
Yep.
She started following the stream and eventually started traveling by water as it was easier and safer. So yeah. obviously with her injuries, that would have been a lot easier because
to just float.
Yeah. She yeah. could some, you know, take the weight off, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah. Aquatherapy, hydrotherapy.
And by this point she was incredibly weak.
Yeah.
Her injuries were infected and she had second degree sunburn. So at one point she Ugh. felt her back
yeah.
was like scratching her back and it was bloody because she yeah. was so burnt.
You don't think about that
burn yeah. yeah yeah I know,
especially not in, where was she, Argentina,
Peru
yeah. yeah.
It was a treacherous journey made more difficult by the fact that she had lost her glasses. So she'd lost her glasses, she couldn't see properly, she had one shoe and a torn mini dress, so she was cold as well yeah. like at night times it would be cold, she was wet because it was a rainforest, she was always getting wet
yeah and obviously she's
going by water
yeah yeah
yeah. So, yeah, it was rough going.
Now, are you going to talk about her in the water?
Not really.
Okay, so I heard that when she was floating down the river, at one point, she was surrounded by crocodiles.
Yes, yeah, I did read that. She saw crocodiles coming, going from the water and was yeah. just like...
If they get me, they get me. Yeah. She was so weak and like... Mm-hmm. But they just left her.
Yeah.
They let her be.
Yeah, yeah, I do recall seeing that. And yeah. she also said something like, I felt like it was still more dangerous to be walking through the jungle. Yeah. 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 Which, as an Australian, I'm like, fuck no, get out of that water. But
girl.
But, you know, maybe she knew, maybe it was like a type of croc that was like a little an freshie alligator. Or something.
Alligator. Right.
Yeah, they're more friendly apparently. She had a number of hallucinations, including seeing houses and hearing chickens.
Have you seen the movie Life of Pi?
No.
Oh, it's such a good movie. You should watch it.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure that, I think it's based on a, I don't want to say I think it's based on a true story in case it's not, because then that would be really embarrassing because it's such a fantastical
yeah.
movie. But, yeah, I think they hallucinate. And also, remember that story about, I think her name was Bobby Jo, and she was that girl whose family got murdered on the yacht. And then I'm going to do the story.
Okay.
And then she was afloat at sea, and she was hallucinating and, like...
Yeah, I think it's quite common, particularly after a few days.
I start hallucinating if my temperature goes 1 degree over,
yeah.
over the recommended, you know, whatever. This episode might sound slightly disjointed because we are constantly being interrupted by
Tills.
The young baby.
She's not in the mood, so we're just having to make do.
Yeah.
On the 10th day, Juliana found a boat. Initially, she thought that she was hallucinating, but once she was close enough to touch it, she realized it was real. Near the boat was a path that led up to a shack, and she initially didn't find anyone at the shack, but she did find a... thing of kerosene.
Oh yeah.
I'm sorry if my voice sounds a bit bobby. I'm like standing up now, bobbing the baby.
Bob and baby.
So yeah, she poured the kerosene on the wound in her arm to kill the maggots.
Yeah.
Yep. Which worked.
But And correct me if I'm wrong, didn't she leave the maggots on because they were eating the dead flesh? So, she knew they were going to eat the dead flesh. So she was like, I'll keep them on for now to keep the wound clean.
I don't know about that. What I read was there were some maggots still remaining, but she managed to kill most of them. But because I think her concern was basically that the maggots were going to keep eating the flesh and she was going to lose her arm.
So I heard in the podcasts mm-hmm. that I've listened to, that I probably trust more than you, mm-hmm. That so the maggots were there and she could have easily just picked them off. So she kept them there to eat the dead flesh, as maggots do, and then when she was able to, like, knew that she was safe, then she could get rid of them.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Yeah, because a lot of them were actually inside her arm, so she couldn't pick them off. They were like eating into her arm from the inside.
Yeah.
She did end up saving her arm. They didn't have to amputate. There were some maggots left in there when she got medical help.
Aren't maggots good for infected wounds?
Well, they eat the infected stuff, but then they'll just start eating all the like they're healthy, like, flesh too.
Yeah, like, we've finished that, we'll move on to the...
Yeah, exactly. So at the she didn't find any people at the shack, as I said. And so she was like, that night she decided to sleep there, but the ground was too hard. So she went back down to the riverbank and slept on the sand because it was comfier. But then the next morning she went back to the shack, and the shack was surrounded by a bunch of frogs. So by this point she was so starving, she decided to try and catch one to eat. And luckily she was too slow because the frogs ended up being poisonous and could have potentially killed her.
Yeah.
Juliana decided that she would stay at the shack one more day to see if there was any sign of people, and if not, she'd keep moving. Shortly after, she heard voices. Three Peruvian men were at the shack and were initially frightened of her. She had pale skin, blonde hair, and by this point had very bloodshot eyes. And apparently there's a ghost called a Yamanja that they believed in, and they were scared that this is what she was.
Yeah.
They thought she was like a water spirit.
Have you seen photos of her?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's very pale, very blonde.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's obviously very injured.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Would have had blood on her. Yeah. Would have been scary.
Yeah.
But she, luckily she was fluent in Spanish. So so she was.
Oh, do you want me to, do you want to know anything that
she's
said?
Okay. That's all right.
Because I know, you know.
You're also fluent in Spanish. Yeah,
you could argue. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she was able to explain to the men what had happened, and they were able to take her to get medical help. But I also read that it was like a fucking 10-hour boat ride to get medical help. So even after she was rescued, it was still like a long time before she got proper medical help. She was soon reunited with her father, but unfortunately her mother died in the accident along with every other passenger and crew member. Juliana was the sole survivor of the crash. All up, this crash killed 91 people.
Wow. And wasn't it like he had essentially been told everyone died in the crash?
He would have, because it was 10 days after they'd stopped sending planes. They would have just assumed that everyone was dead.
Imagine that.
I know, your daughter and your wife.
But then imagine you, like, you're in full grief thinking that your whole family's dead, and then they're like, actually, your 13-year-old daughter.
One person.
Was she 13?
17 at this point.
Oh, 17-year-old daughter. She actually survived, and she's been in the...
Hey, there's one person that survived the crash. It's your daughter.
Yeah.
Incredible. Juliana and her father returned to Germany in the wake of this tragedy, and while Juliana suffered from the grief of losing her mum and had constant nightmares, she ended up going to college and studying zoology like her parents.
Hey.
She eventually got a PhD and returned to the station her parents had set up in the jungle.
Wow.
And she now lives in, it's either Belgium or Germany. It's either Belgium or Germany. But anyway, she travels back to the research station quite often. So she goes back and forth. She's in her 60s now.
All right.
Juliana has said that there were many moments during her time in the forest that she was afraid, but never of the forest itself. She wrote in her book, "It wasn't its fault that I landed in it."
Oh, I love that.
In 2011, Juliana wrote an autobiography, and while I haven't read it yet, I have ordered it, so it's something for me to look forward to next year to read.
Okay. I guess you've got to hang on to those look forward tos.
Yes.
I also read that there's like a plaque in the jungle where this happened.
Oh, is there?
I think so.
Okay.
There was a man that made a movie about this, yes?
Yes, that's Wings of Hope.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, the documentary. Because he was meant to be on the plane, I think.
And isn't he a bit of a weirdo? Isn't it like, what's his name?
It is a strange documentary.
He's a strange man. Hang on. Okay. Werner Herzog. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think put the plaque in the jungle. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so that is the story of Juliana Kopka. I wanted to do a survival story this week because yeah. I wanted to do something a bit more. I mean, obviously 91 people died, but, you know, one survived, so.
Yeah, I guess.
Something to hold on to.
Silver linings.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And sorry if this episode's been a bit short. I don't know if it will be, but I've got to duck off. Very shortly, so we've had to rush it a little bit.
Yeah. And the baby is not cooperating. She's grumpy as hell. But thanks for listening. We'll be back in a fortnight.
Yes.
In a fortnight.
Do you want me to leave that in?
Sure.
For any record producers listening.
Yeah, there's any like song singing agents, I guess I'm available.
Ooh, windy out there.
Windy. We'll be back. Thanks for listening. Any thoughts or comments, send them through to our Instagram. That's Bloody Bizarre. I don't know what the handle is.
It's Bloody Bizarre Podcast.
There you go. Bloody Bizarre Podcast. Jump on over there and engage with us. And we'll...
Oh, gosh.
We'll be back next fortnight.
Thanks for listening.